Hi, I'm Laura LaBelle, the host of The Impossible Job, a podcast about the misadventures in parenting that every parent goes through, regardless of who your family is. Not an expert, just a parent. The Impossible Job podcast is supported by RichmondToDCHelpWanted.com, the hometown advantage. Most folks who work here love living here. They care about the community. At RichmondToDCHelpWanted.com, they're proud to work with the hometown advantage around the clock, connecting local employers to local job seekers. RichmondToDCHelpWanted.com makes it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. Post your job today on RichmondToDCHelpWanted.com. And if you're looking for a good local job, search jobs and apply online right now. Get the advantage of finding a job close to home at RichmondToDCHelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Impossible Job. Before we get started with today's topic and guest, I just wanted to let everybody know that this is going to be the last episode of the 2018 year. So The Impossible Job will return in January 2019, on January 10th. So make sure you're subscribed so that way you don't miss an episode when we do come back. All right, well, without further ado, my guest on today's show is a mother of two, creator of the website Dinner a Love Story. She's also a New York Times bestselling author of three cookbooks, Dinner a Love Story, Dinner the Playbook, and How to Celebrate Everything. She has written for Bon Appetit, Martha Stewart Living, Cookie, and she used to be the editor at Real Simple Magazine. Welcome to the show, Jenny Rosenstock.
Hi, nice to be here.
I'm so happy that you were able to come on the show today. I wanted to talk about celebrations, and I've actually been, well, I've read two of your cookbooks. I read Dinner a Love Story and How to Celebrate Everything. And with the holidays coming up or upon us, I thought you would be like a really awesome person to talk about because of your book, How to Celebrate Everything. It's just all about like rituals and celebrations and kind of just turning the everyday like routines into...
Yeah, the book is popular this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you kind of just give us a brief introduction of yourself? Like, who do you have living with you?
Oh, well, I am, as you said, I'm a mother of two daughters. They are teenagers, Abby and Phoebe, and they are 15 and 16. Yes, I had them very close together, and that's why there's not a third. And then I am married to a book editor. I live outside of New York, and I've been writing the blog Dinner Love Story for about 9 years now, and it turned into, as you said, three books. And yeah, I'm still doing it and writing for a bunch of other places as well. But yeah, Dinner Love Story is all about family dinner and how to get it on the table, but also not just what you're cooking, but what happens around the family dinner table. And I can say this for sure now that I have teenagers. When I started, this was not the case, but or at least I didn't know for sure. But it is really true that if you create a dinner table that's a happy, safe place, you will gravitate towards it always, and so will the kids, even when they're, you know, rolling their eyes and you know, shutting themselves in their bedrooms all day. They will, you know, like their magnetic north at 6:30 or 7, sort of wander down and sit at the table, and you can connect like human beings again. So it's worked out so far, so good.
That's great. That's definitely a goal that I have. I do like in your book, Dinner a Love Story, you say like this is kind of like an open-ended guide. It's not necessarily like you don't put restraints on it. You say, hey, if you have young kids, this might not happen right now, and that's okay. But
yeah,
it's just
I got into a lot of trouble for saying that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if there can be any controversy about family dinner, it's that. I'm just kidding. It was not. I did not get a lot of heat, but a lot of people. I basically said that we were incapable of trying of everyone sitting down and having an enjoyable experience until my youngest was at least three.
Yeah.
We did it, and we could do it, but it wasn't pleasant, and I think it might be different for everybody. Some people might have kids who can sit in the high chair and be fine, but it was just, for me, the whole goal of family dinner is less about, I mean, obviously there are a million levels to it. Like, you know, it would be wonderful if we were all eating the exact same thing, and it was all wholesome and healthy and home-cooked and all that, but the most basic principle for me was like, this is the way it always was for me growing up, was let's have family dinner be a place that we want to be, that everyone wants to be there. It's pleasant. There's, it's a safe space. You can talk. You can look into your children's eyes and communicate with them. I don't want it to be a battlefield. And for so much of their young lives, when I was trying to do it, it was a battlefield, trying to get them to just eat one bite of fish or chicken nugget, whatever it happened to be. It was unpleasant, and I didn't want that persistent feeling to just discourage me, and then therefore I never try it again. So
right.
It didn't really start happening until they turned, you know, as I said, my youngest turned about three, and that's when I really kind of committed to it. So some parents were like, that's crazy, you have to start as soon as they're born. And then others were like, thank God you said that, because I was beginning to feel like a failure as a parent. So, there are two ways to go on that.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the second camp of the thank God you said that, because my, so just to update everyone, I have a 6-year-old. She actually just turned 6, Lucy. And now I have a 2-year-old. He will be turning 3 in February. But he's like a little Viking, because when he's done with something, or if he doesn't like something, he just chucks it across the room. And that makes, I mean, that just makes family dinner, like,
yeah,
sitting down stressful. To dinner, like an impossible thing, because it's not happening. I don't want food flying everywhere. And last night I made salmon cakes, little fried salmon cakes, and they didn't touch it. They're like, what is this? I don't want it.
Right.
And it was just, yeah, we had one of those. All right, fine. You can just have like a snack for dinner. So, because
we have many of those, peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, like, what was your inspiration to start your blog, Dinner Love Story, and then eventually write your cookbooks?
Well, as I've sort of alluded to, I grew up with family dinner, and it was my mom made sure that it was on the table every night. She was a working mom. She is a working mom. She's 82 and still working. And it was a wonderful ritual that I had such a fondness around. And so when I had my own kids, I wanted to make sure that was sort of something I thought about a lot. I said I wanted to, I probably could have been thinking about other things, but I was thinking about dinner. And I wanted to make sure that I had that ritual in place. And it also just so happened that I was keeping, since even way before I had kids, right after I got married, my husband gave me a blank book for a holiday gift or a birthday, I can't remember, but it was like a, you know, just a blank kind of Moleskine type thing. And I started, I'm not even sure why, I just started writing down what I was having for dinner every night, not like a shopping list way, but just like as a record, or like planning out for the week. I would say, like, tonight, chicken cacciatore, tomorrow, turkey burgers, whatever it was. And I would date it. And that was February 22nd, 1998.
Yeah.
That was,
you've been doing that a long time.
And I've been doing it this whole time. I never really stopped. And I'm not really sure why, but it was incredibly handy to have on hand. Like when I started the blog, I didn't start the blog until 10 years after I started that diary. So for me, it was really fun to just go back to the diary and see, okay, well, what are the recipes that are tried and true that come back every week? How has my cooking changed from, you know, when the two of us were just cooking together in our Brooklyn apartment to, you know, when our kids were just newborns to that point, which is, you know, like 2009, my kids were 7 and 6. And so by that time we were kind of having family dinners that resembled, you know, the kinds of family dinners that I always had in my head.
Yeah.
You know, as like the, you know, we were sitting down and we were, you know, it wasn't taking like 2 minutes and 13 seconds to finish everything. It was like an actual dinner. So the dinner diary, I would say, is what kicked it all off. And then when I started writing the blog based on the dinner diary, that just hit a nerve with people, or not, that's the wrong expression, but it just really touched something in a lot of people. They wanted to do the same thing, and it turned out I had a lot to say about dinner, which I didn't even realize. So that turned into it turned into kind of a passion, and then a book, and then another book, and another book. So here I am 10 years later and still writing about dinner.
No, that's awesome. I mean, I got two of your cookbooks for my birthday, and what I really love about them is they're not, yes, they're cookbooks, but they don't read like cookbooks. They read like a book with recipes in them. And you do give like a lot of really good information and like backstory on your life. And it's, when I was reading that, you talk a lot about like your journey that you and your husband took when you were learning how to cook. And you said like you were, when you first started cooking, you were thinking like when you were making like a cake from a box, that was considered from scratch. And
right.
And now you kind
of, I'm a product of the 80s. You have to remember that.
So what would you like give, like what advice would you give to someone who like wants to start cooking more for their family, but they're maybe not very confident in the kitchen?
Well, I mean, for starters, you know, I think you have to, as I said, I think there are many levels of family dinner. And the most important one is that everyone is around the table together. So, and what I hear over and over from people is that's actually the hardest part, is the timing and the time to think about what you want for dinner, you know, go shopping for the food you want for dinner, then actually make the dinner, then have everyone eat the dinner. You know, that's very, very hard just to get to that point. And I think for someone who wants to start the ritual, start there and don't even worry about the food. Just make sure it's something that everyone likes. And there's probably not that many in that. Yeah. It's probably a very short list, but start there. And then if it's, you know, build on whatever it is that they like. If your kids like scrambled eggs, if everyone at the table eats scrambled eggs, have that for dinner and then turn that into, you know, like maybe the next week have scrambled eggs with like, and then also make some tortillas and black beans and an avocado, and then like put the scrambled eggs into the tortilla, you know, and then now you're having like something a little bit more sophisticated. And even if they don't eat it at that level, you're eating it and you're feeling like a grown up, and there you're exposing them to something else. And the exposure is everything. Just like you just keep on doing it, and they'll eventually reach for the avocado or reach for the black beans or whatever it is that they were initially unfamiliar with. So, you know, really, my kind of cooking is so simple. I mean, like, sure, like, we'll have people over, or we'll have days when we want to do big projects. But when we're talking about dinner, especially when our kids were young, we did not do anything fancy. But we always had something delicious and fresh, like a scrambled, that what I just described to you, I'm like dying to eat that right now. I actually, the way I want to eat, I just want to eat, like, those eggs are always going to be fresh and from the farmer's market or from the, you know, we have a great butcher who sells really fresh eggs. And that's, to me, that's a delicious way to eat. You know, you can also, you know, have, if you can make a quick marinara with pasta, that counts, turkey burgers, all these like really basic foods, are they count. So, for the person just starting out, I would say come up with 4 to 5 meals that you can make on autopilot. Like, you don't need to look in a book for just like just really simple recipes. I mean, my book has those kinds of recipes, but if you have your own, I would start there just so that you don't have to. So you can start with a certain level of confidence and then just build from there.
So start just fresh ingredients, start small, build upon it. But I mean, focus more on being together than having like a fancy 4-course meal. So I think
I do feel like that's the hardest part, is getting everyone together. I have a feeling people listening will agree with that point.
Oh, yeah.
They have young kids and 2 working parents.
Yeah. All right. Because I'm going to say I do cook a lot of stuff from scratch. But I mean, honestly, especially around the holiday time, if I get like a pie from the store, if I cook it at home, I consider that homemade. So
of course.
Absolutely. Just, you know, so just have food and, you know, consider it a win that you're all together.
Yeah. Okay. And once you get past, once you like are all together and you nail that, then think about, okay, I'm ready to expand my repertoire a little. Right. Let's see what, you know, Jenny's cooking for her kids. And then like, oh, it's a roast salmon with, you know, this was one of the first meals my kids loved, like a roast salmon with a yogurt mustard dill sauce. And you really, it's as simple as it sounds. You roast the salmon at, you know, 425 for 12 to 15 minutes, maybe finish it in the broiler for like a minute. And then while that's cooking, you whisk together yogurt, Dijon mustard, and chopped dill with maybe a little salt and pepper. And you just have that as a dip alongside the salmon. It's so good. It's so simple, especially if the salmon is fresh. And,
yeah.
That's in my first book, too. But that's a really simple meal for kids and that a grown-up would love. Again, I want to eat that right now.
I was going to say, I'm sitting here and you're describing the yogurt dill sauce, and I'm just like, that sounds so good.
It's so easy. That's it. You know, like,
yeah. I mean, simple food, I think, it'll always taste the best anyway, because you don't get it all muddled with all these other stuff. So,
yes.
Going into your second cookbook, Dinner the Playbook. Now, I have not read this yet. Christmas is coming up, family. Just, you know, hint, hint. But I have read the description, and from what I've gathered from the description and all the rave reviews I've read about it, it's basically like a meal plan to get your family out of the kid food rut. So, like, what is maybe one of the bigger mistakes that parents make when they're trying to introduce new foods to their kids?
Well, I don't want to say anyone's making a mistake, because I think all parents are obviously trying their best. And you never know, like, what's good for one kid is never going to be good for another kid. But I will say, the whole point of that book was to sort of, we had both of our kids sitting at the table. We were on a steady rotation of turkey burgers, pasta with, you know, quote, butter sauce, really kind of basic foods that I was getting a little tired of, and I was missing my old, you know, my husband and I just sort of spending all day thinking, well, what should we make for dinner, and then going shopping and having all the time in the world to sort of do what we loved, which was cook together. So I just decided, I'm not really sure how this, I came up with this idea, but I thought, wouldn't it be great if we just kind of made something new every single night for a month? And so we did. We decided, we called it 30 Days, 30 Dinners, and we cooked something brand new for them every single night for a month. And they got really into it, because we kind of played it up as this big adventure, and there was always something on the plate that we knew they would eat, like even if it was just like a piece of bread with butter. But what I found was this whole concept of 30 Days, 30 Dinners. Mm-hmm. But what I found was the most helpful learning from that was not, oh, we found, you know, like five or six meals that the kids really like, and now those are in rotations. That did happen. But the best thing I learned from it was that the kids got used to this idea of coming to the table not necessarily knowing what they're going to eat. And just to have that open mind was so helpful way past the 30 days. You know, they were so used to a certain rotation of, you know, quote, kid food, that they came to, you know, to the point where if it wasn't something they recognized, they were like, what is this? You know, just like you were saying with the salmon cake, like, what? But when we framed it up front, this is going to be a whole adventure. This is going to be a new month. We're going to try things that are new and exciting. Somehow that made a difference, and they approached the table, you know, like it was a game. And I don't want to say they liked everything, but they tried everything. And they continued to sort of, that attitude towards food continued long after the experiment was done. So that's what the book is about. And so if I had to give any advice to a parent, it would be to just kind of get the kids used to, well, the advice would be first buy the book. but then second, it would be try to get your kids used to this idea of, you know, flexing that adventure muscle a little bit.
And be adventurous.
Be a little adventurous. And that's easy. It's easy to say. It's a lot harder to execute. But yeah, that was the learning.
Yeah, you talk a lot about marketing foods in a certain way to, like, make it more appealing to your kids. So I think that's probably a really good...
Yes, for sure.
You got to learn to be a good market manager for your
always.
Kids. Always.
Yeah, like, I think in my first book, there's a section about how... I remember seeing some, like, big deal marketing guy speak at a conference saying, like, what's the most wonderful word in the English language? And we were like, what? And he said, it's your name. And that just kind of blew my mind. And I remember that when I was, you know, making chicken pot pies for the kids. And I was thinking, oh, wouldn't it be funny if they eat the little chicken pot pies, like little personal pies, had their names on them. So I would make, like, their initials or their monograms. We called them Monogram Pot Pie, so that was fun. But and they loved it. But they already love chicken pot pie, but I need to try it with, like, you know, vegetable pot pies or something.
Yeah, no, I definitely, that's on my list of, like, things that I'm going to try, because both of my kids really like chicken noodle soup, and I've made chicken pot pie before, and they're just, they were like, what is this? I don't want this. It's just different. And so I'm like, what if I'm thinking if I put, like, their name on it or, like, an initial on it, they might market to them better, that they're like, yeah, this is specifically for me.
Tell them that it's apple pie. Tell them it's apple pie, and then they won't. They'll dig right in.
Apple chicken pot pie. There you go. So, like, let's go ahead and transition into your third cookbook, How to Celebrate Everything. And now in this book, you talk a lot about, obviously, celebrations, and then you talk about rituals and routines, and kind of basically that routines are the stuff that you do every day, but rituals are what infuse meaning into those routines. Mm-hmm. And that, honestly, was like, that was poetry to me, because I was like, that's such a wonderful way to look at all the stuff that you do to kind of, like, day to day. What are your, like, family's favorite rituals?
Well, you know, this time of year is the holidays, so there's so many associated with the holidays. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes without saying that almost all of my rituals have some food attached to them as well. Mm-hmm. I think most people do.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't, I say that, like, obviously it's funny, but it's also kind of, it's the smart way to do it, at least with kids, because just, you know, associating certain memories with tastes and flavors and smells is just such a perfect way to seal in that memory and call it up again. But so this time of year, you know, like, we have rituals like, you know, at Thanksgiving, all the cousins, you know, there are how many of them? There are seven of them on my side. We always have Thanksgiving with my family, not my husband's family. And the kids all put together, like, a skit and perform it, you know, in between the feast and dessert, which is really fun. And now they're, like, you know, they're so much older, so we were talking about it this last week, and I was like, what are you guys going to do for the skit? And they're all like, we're not doing it again. And I know they will. You know, they were, like, listening to Kanye in the kitchen. I'm going, well, just do, like, Kanye or something. Like, make it, like, do a, and of course, they'll never do that because I suggested it, but I think it would be funny to just do a, like, a, you know, to some kind of a dance choreography to whatever song they're listening to now. But, you know, so that every year after Thanksgiving, my mom sits down at the dining room table and writes notes for, you know, just what worked, what didn't work, who was there, what the temperature was, like every single detail about the night and the, it's so funny because we always end up making the same exact menu, but somehow these notes, they're so wonderful to read back, because I mean, it's just a nice way of, it's helpful just to see, like, how many, you know, the kids are bigger now, so they're going to eat more than they did, you know, so the notes from 10 years ago are not going to apply, but it's just so fun to see it in my mom's handwriting and to go through that with her every year. That, for me, is a ritual, and it just makes me feel so happy and comfortable and honored that I can, that we're still doing this, even this many years into Thanksgiving with, you know, with all of us having young kids. And you know, but those are just rituals that happen. Those are rituals associated with the holidays, and I think everyone kind of knows what their own rituals are. But How to Celebrate Everything is much more about kind of the day-to-day rituals that you don't even necessarily know are rituals until someone might point them out to you. And so the whole point of the book is kind of to make you pay attention a little bit more to your daily routines so that, you know, you're recognizing those moments. If you're worried that you don't have rituals, first of all you should do is ask your kids, like, what their favorite things to do are, because they have a million things that you don't even realize you do. Like, my daughter recently said, I love how we always get french fries and strawberry milkshakes after a soccer game. And I was like, we do that? I didn't know we did that. We don't do it all the time, but we do it sometimes. And so now I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. Maybe we should do that all the time. And so it's made me just happy that she's noticing something that I'm not even trying to do. And someday maybe she'll do that with her kids and say, my mom always used to take me after, you know, a strawberry milkshake after the soccer game. And who knows, maybe it'll be after, you know, the whatever local theater production her kid is in, you know. But whatever it is, it's something that just happened. And I think those are the moments that I'm going to think about when my kids are no longer living in my house, and they'll bring back, you know, hopefully happy memories, you know, let alone when I actually eat French fries and a strawberry milkshake, that then they'll all come flooding back. So,
yeah.
So that's, you know, that's just one little example, but the book talks about just a lot of, you know, like just how we walk at the farmer's market every Saturday, and we, in the summer, we get all the ingredients for, you know, a tomato sandwich and then go home and make it. And, we always go for a hike and end at, like, our favorite food places. So those kinds of things. Always rewarding ourselves with food.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you kind of bring up that you don't even realize that some of your everyday routines are actually, like, rituals. You just kind of have to, like, change your framework of how you're thinking about it, because it made me think of when I was younger, and every time I went to the orthodontist with my mom and I had to get my braces tightened, every time after the orthodontist we would go to Checkers, and I would get their French fries and then, like, a milkshake. And
that's so funny,
like, when I think back on it, I don't remember the, like, how painful the orthodontist appointment was.
I think about
how awesome it was that we were able to get, like, French fries and milkshakes and things like that. So it kind of puts, like, those little rose colored glasses over the whole memory, but it makes it a really nice memory. So I really look forward to listening to my kids when they're older, and that is, like, a really nice memory. So
I know, you, that's the fun part about it all. It's like, I can write all these down in a book, but, like, what is actually going to keep, we have no idea as parents, what are they going to remember? Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's the good stuff, you know. I think that's so too, but hopefully it's the happy stuff.
So in your experience, what are some of, like, the best ways that we can infuse meaning into our celebrations? Because I mean, during the wintertime, I personally get a little celebration fatigued, because my daughter's birthday is in November. We have Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. then there's Christmas, then there's New Year's, and then we have, like, 5 family birthdays and an anniversary in January.
Oh my God. Yeah,
and then in February, we have 2 birthdays. So by the end of, like, the winter months, I'm just kind of, like, celebrated out. How do you...
I don't have a specific problem, but I can see how you would get fatigued. I mean, you don't need me to tell you this, but I feel like the only thing you really have to do in order to infuse meaning into a special occasion is to, well, first of all, the fact that you're marking it with some sort of party is, it's in itself a nice way to do it, but also, you know, just say something like a toast, or say something that's genuine. And it doesn't have to be like a long toast. It doesn't have to be, you know, like a poem. My father-in-law is famous for writing these, like, beautiful poems at special occasions. But, and I love, and we save them forever, and they're all in a book now, and that's wonderful. But you don't have to do that. You just have to, like, the most important thing is to just say something, acknowledge who's there, acknowledge who's maybe not there, who once was there, and mark the occasion that way. I think, you know, there's so many times, like, I'm sure we've all been to those weddings that are just, like, everything is perfect, you know, like, the flowers are gorgeous, and the dress is beautiful, and the venue is, you know, just, like, stunningly decorated, and the food is delicious, and then, like, like, if there's not a toast or something said, it just kind of feels a little empty, you know? You're like, well, it's all wonderful and fun, but, like, where's the soul? And
a void of sentiment, yeah.
Yeah, we call, in the book, I have this whole thing called the empty celebration syndrome and how to avoid it. And so one of the things I prescribe is the toast, of course. But then, you know, like, also just what I was saying before about my mom's ritual of writing down, you know, everything after it happens on Thanksgiving, like, that's a really nice way to sort of, for any occasion, not just Thanksgiving, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like, how many pounds the turkey was and how much is left over. It can just be just notes about what happened and recorded somewhere for posterity, so that maybe your kids can read about it someday. and then their kids can read about it someday, and there could be some kind of continuity. But yeah, you know, also, like, if we're talking Thanksgiving and Christmas, we used to do this with young kids, which I thought was really sweet. We used to do, my husband would draw, like, these Mad Libs for them on their placemats, and it would just sort of say things like, you know, what, basically, like, what I'm grateful for, like, food-wise, parent-wise, sibling-wise. It was really, it's very, I wish I had it in front of me, but it's in the book, and it's very sweet how, like, they end up filling out, you know, what, like, three things I'm grateful for. And I remember my father did one, too, and he was, like, his three things were, like, my kids, their kids, the family. There was nothing else to him that mattered. I thought that was so funny. But the kids, you know, were obviously different. They were like, you know, chocolate pudding pie. Mom makes this, like, famous chocolate pudding pie for Thanksgiving, which is also in that book. But anyway, that's a very sweet way, because you can keep all those sheets.
Yeah, and you can look back.
So, there's, I think, just, like, actually also just being there and being, you know, intentionally living in the moment while the celebrating is happening, you know, can't overstate how important that is.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice.
Thanks.
What are some of your best tips and tricks for entertaining during this holiday season? Because you, in your book, you talk about how you do this Christmas party, and then you have, like, a fancy little New Year's Eve party. And it's not necessarily always, like, huge, but it's still, you're inviting people to your home. And I think that can be kind of intimidating for people to feel like they have to make all this stuff and then host. So what are your, maybe some tricks to get through it?
I mean, I actually just wrote a story, it's in the current issue of Parents magazine, all about, it's like basically hosting your first holiday party when you have young kids. And the general theme for the whole story was basically, like, do not feel like you have to make everything yourself. You know, that's just, people don't need that. And also, there's so many things you can buy that are going to taste better, you know, than what you would make anyway. So, you know, my advice is just to, like, have a massive snack board. You know, do you know what these snack boards are? Have you, like, I feel like I can't go on Instagram without like, oh my God, it's like snack board porn. But, like, maybe it was giant board, and then just, like, beautiful spreads of, like, cheese and charcuterie and fruits and nuts, and it's all, like, and then, like, with maybe, like, a sprig of, you know, like, some flour here and there. It just looks really pretty and very festive, and that's, like, totally, you can do ahead of time. It's room temperature. Kids can grab at it. Parents can grab. It's so simple. In terms of, like, just organizing, like, one of the things I always do initially when people write back, like, yeah, I'm coming, what can I bring, I always give them an assignment. Like, I never say, no, don't, just bring yourself. I never say that. I always take people up on their offer to bring something. And if you can think strategically about it, then it really helps you in terms of planning. Like, for instance, I think it's really fun. I did a pie bar once for dessert.
Ooh.
Like, where we just had, like, and this wasn't even Thanksgiving. It was for just a winter party, like, in February. I can't even remember why I was having the party, but I think it was just to kind of get through the long winter. But I just had everyone bring their favorite pie, and it was, you know, so, like, when someone write back, like, what can I bring, I'd be like, I love your, you know, pecan pie, just, or it wasn't pecan pie, whatever it was, bring an apple pie. And so we had, like, this beautiful array of pies, and so that dessert was taken care of. I didn't have to do anything but whip some cream, and then you know, like, wine, obviously, just, like, if you can just think ahead and be like, I like, you know, Pinots from Oregon, just, like, people like to know exactly, they like exact assignments, and you can't be shy about asking for it, especially if they're offering. People like to help. And so my feeling, I mean, again, the takeaway from all these ideas is, do not put it all on you. Like, just, people want to get together. They want to come over. They want to hang out with you. That's the most important thing. And so you don't want to be at a party and then be at your own party and then just, like, you know, be in front of the oven, like, taking the cheese puffs out and, you know, waiting for them to burn and stressing about that when someone's ringing the doorbell. And that's just, like, what's the point, you know? So those are a couple tips.
So delegate, say, like, delegate your, delegate the duties, Pre-made and is also, homemade, and wine.
The most, yes, exactly. But the most very important trick for all entertaining, not even just holiday entertaining, is to make sure you start the evening with an empty dishwasher. Don't ever go into a party with a full dishwasher.
If you're going to a party, what are your like favorite food-related gifts to give to your friends, family members? I mean, for me, I know my go-to is like little drop scones, and then I pair them with like tea, like little tea bags to go with the scones. So
that's a sweet idea.
Is there like anything that you love to bring, or that is maybe like most requested?
You know, I'm a bad guest. I really just bring wine, but I think if I had to bring something, what I give a lot.
That's a good guest in my book. Anyone who brings me wine is a good guest, so.
Right, that's true. I give a lot of granola just around the, not just for parties, but just in general, like as thank you gifts. I have a good kind of olive oil granola that's really easy to make, and then I just bag that up with a ribbon, and it's always welcome. For my dad, you know, he grew up in the Bronx in the, you know, 30s and 40s, and is a huge Entenmann's fan. Like his idea of like heaven is just like anything from the Entenmann's bakery department. And we obsess over the sour cream and chocolate chip loaf cake that they made in the 80s, and they somehow discontinued it. Occasionally people will call me and say, I saw it in this place in, you know, Oregon or whatever, but it's just you can't get it anymore. And so one year for a food gift for him, I made one from scratch just to try to replicate that. That was delicious, and he loved it. He was really happy about it.
It sounds
amazing. You know, yeah, that recipe is in How to Celebrate Everything. And it is like the perfect recipe for just like a Christmas morning when everyone's picking at things and drinking coffee and opening gifts. And yeah, it's delicious. But it also has like a little meaning to it. So, you know, there you go. That's like infusing meaning into something as well. It's just like, oh, what can I make for someone that actually is connected to a memory or a place we traveled together or something we talked about? Or I'm always kind of trying to use food in that way.
No, I think that's really smart because if there's something that somebody likes and then you kind of try to make like your homemade version of it right there, that's, I mean, in my opinion, that's like the perfect gift. If someone made me something that we had like this shared memory of and then they put their own twist on it, I think that would make it just 10 times more special. So,
absolutely. I mean, I think if you're trying to think of doing that for someone, like, it's just like, you just think, okay, well, where have we gone out to dinner and what do we eat? What do we like so much? Or, you know, what did we love to eat when we were kids? Like, there's so many ways to get to that point if you're struggling to think of like what that item is. But it's always fun when you land on it.
Yeah. And if all else fails, wine. Cause I mean,
because it's wine.
Because it's wine.
It's wine.
Everyone needs it. So this obviously this time of year, because I mean, so when this episode comes out, it's gonna be just past Thanksgiving, but we still got Christmas, we still got our Hanukkah, we still also have New Year's, things like that. So there's a lot of traditions that kind of swirl around these types of holidays. What kind of traditions do you hope that your children are going to remember the most when they are older,
like specifically about the holidays? I mean, I think they're already doing it. I can just tell they just love Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah just because everyone's together. I think one of our rituals, I'm Jewish and my husband he grew up in a house that celebrated Christmas. He's not really religious, but it's very important to him to have a tree every year. So when we are trimming the tree, we try to get the tree during Hanukkah, during one of the days of Hanukkah, so that I can make latkes while we trim the tree, because I feel like that's a pretty accurate description of us food-wise. you know, like it's like we're trimming the tree and making latkes at the same time. It's just kind of funny. And they love it, the kids. They love latkes and they love trimming the tree. And so it's kind of just this happy little mashup of traditions that I hope they'll do with their kids someday. And they also, we spend Christmas at my husband's family's house, and for as long as he's, I mean, even when he was like 5 years old, he was making Christmas cookies with his mom, and so she always has a ball of that cookie dough waiting for the girls when they show up. So they make Christmas cookies together and decorate, and it's like the most basic cookie recipe too. You know, like I always see this time of year, like on all the social media channels, like everyone making these like super beautiful fancy cookies and so beautifully decorated, and these are so funny. They're just, I mean, the cookies themselves are delicious. It's like the most basic, like butter, sugar, flour, and then the icing is just like powdered sugar and milk, you know, with a little butter whisked together. And
no, they are delicious, because I've actually made them, because after I read your book, How to Celebrate Everything, I just was like, I was pumped up. I'm like, I'm going to make some memories with my kids. And it was right around Halloween, or it was before Halloween. So just so everybody knows, the two books that I got, as soon as I got them for my birthday, within that week, I had read both of those books cover to cover. It was, they are really great. So I'm really excited to hopefully get that third book. Wink, wink, that's nudge, fun. Nudge. But,
wink, wink, wink. But, I'll send it to you if no one else. So you know, those cookies are like, there's nothing kind of fancy about them, but they're actually so cute when the kids decorate them.
Cause, yeah.
You know, they're not fancy, and they're just so fun. You put like little food dye in like each bowl, so they're different colors, and it's so cute. And
yeah, because they were so easy, I didn't have like that anxiety of, oh, don't spill that or don't do that, because I'm kind of weird when I have, like, my daughter wants to help in the kitchen. I'm kind of like, but you're just going to make a mess. But it was easy, and it was fun, and we made, that's what we did. We made Halloween cookies. So
that
was
perfect.
One thing I'm hoping that we'll try to do every year, and we'll probably do the same thing with, like, the Christmas cookies. I'll just, you know, get different cookie cutters for those. So.
Absolutely. That's good. It's an all occasion dough. I could eat that right now. So yummy.
Yeah, so we're doing that. So that's one thing that I definitely hope that my kids will want to do, or just, it's something that they'll look forward to every year. Christmas Eve, my husband and I and my two kids, we kind of celebrate at our house, because Christmas Day, we go over to my mom's, and that's the whole family just kind of shows up in their PJs. We have like a big brunch that we just kind of snack on throughout the day, and then we open presents and things like that. And like one of our big traditions is you can open your stocking, but you cannot open any presents until everyone is accounted for. So
that's a good rule.
Yeah, so everyone kind of opens their stockings kind of leisurely, which is nice, but that way it also gives the kids something to do during that time, so they, because they get in that mentality, like, that they want to rip everything open, so it kind of holds them back. But I mean, that is something that I think, especially this time of year, everyone kind of gets nostalgic and kind of yearns for that, like, what traditions are my kids going to remember most and value most? And I think your book is definitely a really good guideline for kind of letting people know that just like your everyday stuff is going to be stuff that your kids remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, like, I think I finish the book by saying that, which is like, don't stress too hard on the idea that you don't have rituals. Like, just stand back and watch at the holiday, and I'll bet you anything you'll notice. Like, if you just have that mindset, if you go into Christmas or Hanukkah or anything with the idea of what are, you know, if you're looking for it, if you're looking for what your kids are looking forward to, and you'll find so many things. So it's not one more thing to worry about. You know, oh my God, I have to create a ritual. Like, that's the best rituals don't happen that way. They happen organically, and they're happening without you even realizing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good place to kind of leave this off, is just don't put so much pressure on yourself to have these or make these like memories, because they're just going to happen organically as long as you're present and in the moment. So
yes, I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
Well, Jenny Rosenstock, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. I really love talking to you. I hope to have you on in the future. If you have anything that you are planning to do, or if you have a fourth cookbook coming out, please let me know.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I'm also going to go ahead and put a link on our website to Jenny's blog and to a link to her cookbooks, because they do make really great gifts. I'll put that up on the site for you. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you rate, comment, and subscribe. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. You can find The Impossible Job at b1015.com. Just make sure you type in the keyword podcast. You can also join the Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at @_impossiblejob. And if you want to contact me directly, you can email me at laura@wbqb.com. All right, everyone, have a wonderful holiday season. And Jenny, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much.
And bye, everybody.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the host and guests on this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of Centennial Broadcasting.